You are listening to a sermon by Bill Thiessen, recorded on Sunday, November 6, 2022, at Point Grey Inter-Mennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
So thank you very much for this invitation. I was initially captured by the most recent performance of the Pearl Fishers Opera in Vancouver, and in which one of your members or persons attending took part as a violinist, Rebecca. Hence, my mind entered a quest for a metaphorical pearl and for what Jesus taught through the medium of that parable. I'm doing this with some risk, I know. The Pearl Fishers, the opera, the other opera other than Carmen, which Bizet wrote, is dramatic, as opera plots are expected to be. The setting is in the region of Ceylon, modern Sri Lanka, well known for its quality of pearls in Bizet's day. Apart from the reality of the hazardous search, it does not, however, dovetail well with my meditation, but I'll use it. Nevertheless, the imagery conveyed by the music and dramatization reinforces the extreme hazards that are or were known to come along with the profession of the daredevil pearl fishing. The act of weighing down the body of a fisherman, for example, with a large stone in order that he will reach the deepest level of the best pearls, and extremely high death rate of pearl fishers creates an image of grave danger. Jesus doesn't talk about that. Pearl fishing has also captured the imaginations of writers, of course, as in the case of John Steinbeck, the popular novel The Pearl, besides Bizet. The highly popular friendship duet, commonly called the Pearl Fishers Duet, seems to override the whole story, and we all seem to know it from other contexts. When Jesus told the parable of the pearl merchant, he plunged the deepest level of meaning and purpose in life. The parable, or comparable to real life, is stating very simply, the kingdom of heaven is like this. A person, pearl fisher, is in search of fine pearls. When she or he finds one that is unusually fine, of great value, he sells all or she sells all that he or she owns and buys it. That's it. Jesus, why are you speaking to us in parables? They asked him, and so do we. And he would say, it's to reveal the secrets of life. He answers, secrets which are understood only by those who can comprehend, for whom the experience is comparable. Such secrets are hidden from those who do not comprehend. It would be appropriate to regard such as true related to life in the new movement, which Jesus came to usher in. It is altogether a conundrum. The Lord does not dwell on the details, the rigors and risks related to pearl fishing. Nevertheless, the rigors do parallel life. The mollusk or the oyster has to endure a considerable pain to absorb and build a beautiful translucent necker around the foreign object or particle of sand as it protects itself. And as it protects itself, it builds a treasure of great worth. As a result, the pearl in Jesus' story is worth giving up or selling everything in order to afford it. Now, pearls were then of great value, very precious, maybe even more so than gold. The dynamic related to Jesus teaching his parables, his followers in parables, is dramatic as well, and the response of disciples is at times bizarre. Jesus tells the story of the parable of the vineyard in Matthew 20, which we read. It fits a certain sequence. A rich young ruler comes to Jesus on the spur, so to speak, on the run. "What must I do to inherit eternal life?" he asks. The Lord answers, "Keep the commandments." And then he asks, "What are they?" And Jesus says, and he says, "I've kept them all from my youth. What else must I do?" And Jesus says to him, "Because you have lived well, you must sell everything you own and give proceeds to the poor." The disciples hear this and react, specifically Peter. He says, "We have left everything to follow you. What do we get out of it?" Jesus replied pointedly with an amazing picture, a promise that everyone who follows me, he says, will gain 100-fold and inherit eternal life, referring also to the ultimate goal when he himself will be in heaven in glory. Jesus follows with a parable of the vineyards, as was read, vineyard workers, as was read, whose wages are quite disproportionate. Those who work only 1 hour receive as much as those who work all day. And this is not, of course, a guide for masters or employers or business people. It's about the kingdom. The disciples literally walked out of that parable. And Jesus said to them, in effect, "This is about you, disciples. It's about you, my followers. And you walk out of it." That's what it seems to be. And they miss the secret message, the mystery. To add to the conundrum, this was followed by the peculiar request by the mother of the sons of Zebedee, or by John and James themselves, "May we sit beside you when you get into your kingdom." Totally missing the point. Now, our parable does not address the origin of the pearl. This I am interposing. The Lord addresses the value of the pearl as a priceless treasure, the value which cannot be measured. It is personal. So what is the significance of the parable? You might have an answer or a comment. What is it? Is it to identify a new God movement, even today, in the midst of all this trouble we are facing? Is it the way of peace? Is pearl the peace? Is pearl the pearl of peace? And anyone who finds such a pearl will sell everything, or will give up everything to obtain it. That is maybe your experience and maybe mine. So how is this metaphorical pearl obtained in one's life, in your life, my life? Is there a parallel truth? Is it obtained by choice? Or does it come along only as we do our life in this world? In the context of one's life, yours and mine, grains, irritants may come along, and maybe more seriously other matters. Grains may be of bitterness and anger and rejection, causing suffering and deep loss, endurance and weeping, and all this affects us. A person who possesses such a pearl is really a resource for others, a resource of spiritual reserve and resolve. And you have met such a person as that. Maybe you are such a person as that, or I, such a person who is a resource for other people. A person builds resilience in the face of adversity and instability. We have experience that keeps us going. And in the context of that life experience, we build a kind of necker, a beautiful necker, which people observe as one who has endured. And when we do this also to encourage others who are going through difficulty of adjustments, who are building their own kind of necker. And we become people of peace in our relationships. And we face hardship with others in companionship. That's what a fellowship is for. And that is where a beautiful life emerges. Peace is the movement, a conviction that springs from the resting in the realm of God and Jesus in this kingdom. So I asked the question this morning, which is this realm which cannot be shaken? What would be your response? Is this a place? Is this the world? Is this an atmosphere? Is it only coming through revelations? How do we perceive this realm which is unshakable? Jesus says, the kingdom is within you. I have a few stories which I will tell one briefly, which reinforces this being Peace Sunday. There was a man named Dan. And Dan was an animated student in Manila during the Marcos years. He was determined to do his part to get rid of that man. And he joined the movement. He became a communist because he thought this was the best way to get rid of Marcos. So he did. And then Marcos was deposed. And the battle was over peacefully. It was a nonviolent movement. Movement by the people, a people power. So Dan realized that he had better leave the country, because if he didn't, he would be taken captive by his own companions who thought he had deserted the cause. And so he asked his father what to do, and his father said, come back to church, Dan. Join the church again. And he did. But he couldn't stay in the country. He was sent by his church to Canada to work with the people in diaspora, Philippine people in diaspora in Winnipeg, of all places. He and his wife, Georgie, spent some time there, and then he was assigned a higher calling to be the Canadian rep for the Baptist Church and missions. This he did. He moved to Richmond, BC, and he, at the same time, was obtaining his PhD in theology at VST, Vancouver School of Theology. And as he was there, he was reading all these books in the library about Mennonites and about Anabaptists. And he drank it all in, he said. He drank it all in. He read every book he could find. And then he and his wife said, we must find a church like that. Which church here teaches peace? He went to Peace Mennonite Church. He walked into the door, they did, and they asked the first person they asked, he saw, does this church teach peace? And of course, the person said, yes. He happened to be Gert Bartel. And from there on in, the rest is so-called history, because this led him to going back to his people, to his country. And he vowed to work with the Muslims in Mindanao, the Muslims who were deemed to be rebels and enemies of the state. He went and joined them. He spent 6 months living with one of the senior members in the Muslim cause, in a Muslim community, a Datu. 6 months to visit, spend time with him. And in the end, he became known as a man of peace. He says, Dan says, when I lived with this man, this great man, the Datu, I learned to understand who I really was as a believer, as a Christian. Now I know who I am. Now I know what my convictions are. I'm a man of peace. And that's the story which to me resonates with this being Peace Sunday. And finally, I'm quoting from one maybe well-known hymn, like a river glorious is God's perfect peace, over all victorious in its bright increase. Perfect, yet it flows fuller every day. Perfect, yet it grows deeper all the way. Thank you.